Michelle says in the middle of the night in October of 2011, she was awakened by an intruder in the house.
The life of privilege came crashing down.
She lied to us about so much stuff. Tell your own kids that many different stories. No one knows the truth.
She thought that she could go on 48 hours and say this outrageous, crazy. It's a fantasy world that she lives in.
But cops weren't buying that story. Michelle, they believed, was the killer.
I'm walking to the bedroom, and all of a sudden, I get hit really, really hard, and everything went black. Greg's in bed, and I see blood running down his nose.
If she's talking, she's usually lying, and I'm her sister.
Police believed Michelle was the killer, but they didn't have enough evidence to bring her to trial, so they started talking about a plea deal. But before it was finalized, an interview with 48 Hours would end up turning the case upside down. You feel as though you were being pressured to change your story.
I totally was. I was completely coerced.
Hi, welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick. Happy Tuesday.
And our episode today is Domestic Deceit, The Lies and Betrayals of Michelle Williams.
Yes, Michelle was quite a slippery character here.
Yes, lots of twists and turns and a lot of lies.
Yes.
Yes, so much so that I felt it needed to be in the title.
And you did.
I did, yep. So let me give you a little background, as I always do, and then we'll do our beer.
Okay, let's go.
So when Michelle Williams was accused of killing her husband, she gave the police at least two versions of what happened. She initially told police an intruder had killed her husband, but after hours of interrogation, Michelle changed her story to say that Greg had killed himself. And she said that she was trying to cover it up to protect her four-year-old daughter.
Right. Now, there's a couple things with that.
Okay.
A four-year-old isn't going to comprehend anything other than daddy's dead.
Sure.
So whether he was killed or killed himself isn't going to make any difference to her.
I wouldn't think so, no.
No. The other thing I read somewhere that the initial story of the intruder was because of his life insurance policies that wouldn't pay off if it was a suicide.
Uh-huh.
So she went with the intruder story first.
Okay.
To help make some more money. And I think when she found out that the police weren't buying that excuse, went to the suicide.
Yeah, she is a real liar, huh? Very deceitful.
Quite a piece of work.
Yeah. Now, there was also a lack of forensic evidence because someone had wiped down the crime scene with bleach, which Michelle eventually admitted to, wiping down everything with Clorox bleach wipes.
Yeah, but she only did that when confronted with that possibility. She wasn't volunteering that, was she?
She wasn't volunteering anything at first except her story about the intruder.
Right.
Right. So this story of Michelle Williams and her behavior before and after she murdered her husband Greg is a strange story. It's hard to believe that it's a true story. But like we've said before, truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
For sure it is.
It includes disturbing details about her past, a trail of relationships with various men, and a pattern of dishonesty and manipulation. A very twisted case from a twisted woman.
Very.
Yes. Now, before we go ahead and do the beer review, can I just do a couple of five-star reviews?
Of course.
I want to get some of them done. Okay.
Let's hear some.
Okay, so one is from Chris Christensen, and it's called I Want to Win a Snifter, which we've had a few of those with the recent contest.
Yes.
But Chris says, I use Pocket Casts, so I can't rate you on iTunes. Please enter me. Oh, and I love the podcast. One of my favorites, Smiley Face.
Well, that's certainly a concise review, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought you'd like it, because you're kind of concise, especially when you're writing.
I am.
You're right to the facts.
I'm not sure I'm that concise, but anyway. Thanks.
No,
thanks
not.
For the note, Chris.
Yeah, welcome to the brewery, Chris. And then we have Scott. And Scott's title was 10-star review.
I like that.
He said, as an avid beer maker and true crime enthusiast, I would like to give you not a 5-star, but a 10-star review. I find myself listening to your podcast as I am brewing my homemade beer. Your telling of the facts I find riveting, and at times I find myself discussing the crime with you. Thank you for all you do and keep up the great work. And then, actually, Scott offered to send some beer along of his homebrew from Rhode Island, so keep your fingers crossed, Dickie. It might be your time, finally.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm always interested in trying beer from different areas of the country, and particularly homebrewers. There's a lot of breweries now
that
started out as homebrew people.
Yes.
And they've moved up, so I'm always looking forward to trying homebrews.
Yeah, get in on the ground floor.
Right.
Maybe you could invest in one of them.
Well, let's try the beer first.
Okay. All right. Speaking of beer, let's have your review.
Okay. We're looking at a crime in Texas for this week, and I'm picking a beer called Smog Lifter, which is brewed by Brash Brewing Company in Houston. This is a relatively new brewery, I believe, because we've been to Houston several times when our daughter lived there, and I don't recall ever finding a Brash beer.
Okay.
But anyway, Smog Lifter is a milk stout, and by that I mean they are stouts that have a larger amount of residual dextrins and unfermented sugars, which give the brew more body and a sweetness that counters the roasted malt character of the typical stout.
Okay.
So here we go with Smog Lifter. Most milk stouts
are
medium alcohol content. This one, Smog Lifter, is a 10%er, so it's
a little higher. Yeah.
A little higher.
Sure.
And you can notice it. So on to the beer itself. It's black, very dark black, with just a ring around the perimeter of the glass that's the head. There's very little head to speak of.
Now, those dark beers like that, do you drink those out of pint glasses?
Stouts can be drunk out of pint glasses, sure.
Okay.
In fact, that's what we're going to use today.
Okay, great.
I set it up with the bartender beforehand.
See, I'm learning a lot from you.
So this has a sweet cream aroma, some roasted malt, and noticeable booze.
Now, noticeable in how you feel it afterwards or noticeable in the taste?
You can sniff it and you can taste it.
Okay.
But mostly a milk chocolate taste, a little coffee, and the alcohol. This is a larger-bodied milk stout than typical, but quite good.
Okay.
And I don't think the alcohol detracts from it.
Good. Very good.
Let's grab our beer and our pint glasses.
Well, we want to open it first, or you want to go down the end and then open it?
Oh, I'm just going to grab it because I want to get into it.
Okay, let's go down to the quiet end and open up the beer.
Yeah.
All right.
It's fairly quiet. I think the crowd's going to be showing up later because today's the playoff game for the wild card American League series.
Well, that's something I would have no idea about.
Well, if you were a baseball person, you'd know that Toronto and Baltimore are playing tonight. So we'll be out of here before they start the game and the place gets crowded and raucous.
Good. Good planning.
And if you think it's raucous tonight with just a wild card game,
wait
till the Red Sox show up in a couple more days.
Okay.
Then it'll be really rocking.
It'll be car bomb time.
Yep.
Okay. Let's move on down.
Okay. Here we go.
So, Dickie, Greg Williams was a self-made millionaire. He was a brilliant computer engineer who worked hard, and he built a business that he ran out of his home. He was divorced. He had a 10-year-old daughter when he met Michelle.
He was divorced twice.
Yes.
So, third time.
Yes, both of them.
Yes, and she'd been married and divorced twice.
Yes. Now, Greg's sister Michelle and his brother, Michael, always thought that the other Michelle, as they called her, was just bad news. They didn't like her from the start. Michael, Greg's brother, was at a nightclub with Greg and Michelle on their first date, and Michael's first impression was that Michelle was slutty, he said. Doing things to his brother in the nightclub, which most people would think you need to get a room for.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This was their first date?
This was their first date.
And she's all over him.
She's all over him, and that seems to be her M.O., is to lure men in with her sexuality.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that can usually work, at least for a while.
Temporarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't always last.
No, I would say it probably never lasts.
Yeah.
Or hardly ever lasts.
Hardly ever, yeah.
But, it certainly would get a guy's attention.
to she have did get a, his attention.
A good-looking lady being all over you.
Well, whether or not she's good-looking is kind of questionable, in my opinion.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not getting into
that. Everybody has their different opinion, and I'm sure to some people she was good-looking, but I didn't think she was very attractive.
Well, I didn't either, but yeah. And certainly by the time the trial started, she was very unattractive.
Well, I could just say she had a good figure, but that's about it.
Okay.
Okay. But it seems that Michelle, she had a habit of using her sexuality, and throughout the years it had gotten her what she wanted.
How'd she do that?
Well, at the age of 24, she had 3 children. She'd had 2 different fathers to the children, and she was divorced from her first husband. Now, Michelle claims that her marriages ended because her husbands were unfaithful. But her sons tell a different story about that.
Sons from the first marriage. Or one of those.
One of those. I'm not sure if they're both from the same dad. They don't look very much alike.
No, they don't.
No, but they do have a very common opinion of their mother.
And it's pretty low.
Pretty low. It's sad.
Yeah.
Now, her younger son, Andrew, told Peter Van Zandt on the 48 Hours program that his mother was unfaithful in all of her relationships prior to marrying Greg Williams. He wasn't sure if she was unfaithful to Greg. But it seems a distinct possibility.
Well, there's a definite pattern there, right?
Yes. Now, according to Andrew, his mom cheated on his dad, on her second husband, and on her boyfriend after that that they lived with.
Yeah.
Before she found and married Greg Williams.
And each time it was like she was moving up.
Yeah.
You know?
Moving up the ladder.
Yeah. So she somehow, how did she get to meet Greg Williams? Was it a dating site or something?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
That's in question.
All right.
Now, Michelle's older son, Lee, said his life with his mother was actually a nightmare. It was just crazy. And it involved strip clubs where she worked and many men. Lee said Michelle did, quote, dirty stuff, unquote, for money and dragged him along as a child for the ride.
Oh, gosh.
So he had a very disturbing childhood, according to him.
So he's talking about her prostituting herself.
Well, he didn't go as far to say she was definitely a prostitute, but he said she was definitely sleeping around a lot and working as a stripper.
And she was performing things that earned her money.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And probably not just stripping.
Probably not, because he did say that he knew she had slept around a lot.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if she got some money out of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, it seemed that Michelle hit the jackpot when she met Greg Williams, because Greg was very wealthy.
He's very wealthy.
Very wealthy. They married in 2007, and they moved right into an $800,000 house.
Whoa.
Yeah. On their first anniversary, he bought matching Mercedes for them, so he had money.
He definitely
Serious
did.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the marriage to Greg hadn't tamed her at all. She actually propositioned her brother-in-law, who is Greg's sister's husband, Bryn, and his name was Bryn Fletcher, and in his attic, she had asked him for help up the ladder, and turned out she wasn't wearing any panties.
Nice move.
Yeah.
That's pretty subtle, isn't it?
It is subtle. Yeah. Oh, Michelle. You are bad.
Didn't work, though, did it?
No. I think that Michelle Fletcher and Bryn Fletcher seem to really have a pretty good relationship,
mm-hmm.
from what I've read and what I've seen.
Yes.
Now, in October of 2011, Michelle and Greg had their 4-year-old daughter, and they appeared to be a happy family, at least from the outside. They gave the impression of a couple that had everything.
So, you still haven't told me how they met. Are you saving that?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
I'll be quiet and I'll be patient.
Okay, but we can talk about how they had the 4-year-old daughter, they appeared happy, they lived in a beautiful home, they apparently had plans to either put a pool in or fix up a pool for the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he bought Michelle a yogurt shop didn't he buy her a facility?
Yeah, he did.
To keep her busy.
And weren't they buying a new home?
Yes, and that was part of the problem, is they didn't have the money for the down payment because Michelle had embezzled.
Yes, we're going to
get to that.
Get into that.
But But in October of 2011, Michelle called 911 and Greg was found shot dead in his bed. And many family members and friends immediately suspected Michelle.
Yeah, I guess people, for the most part, didn't have a very high opinion of her.
No, people didn't like her.
Yeah.
Even her own kids, even her sister, which I think I have a little something in here about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, both her adult sons just think she's a piece of crap.
Yeah, and it's I don't think they want to. I think they've given her many chances. They want to be able to love their mother, but...
Well, they're her sons.
Right.
Of course they want to try to love their mother, but
yeah.
It looks like she made it pretty impossible.
It seems that way, yeah. When Greg's mom and his stepfather called Greg's brother Michael to tell him that Greg had been killed, Michael said that he immediately said she killed him, referring to Michelle.
Yeah.
So he wasn't really that... He was surprised that his brother died, of course, but he really thought that it would have been Michelle if that had happened.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Because she seemed to be kind of a gold digger, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was looking out for herself.
Right.
And anything that brought money or presents or trophies to her was good.
Yeah.
So she was milking old Greg for a lot of money.
Yeah, and I hadn't heard anything about what she was doing for a living beforehand. If she did have a job beforehand, she dropped it immediately when they got together.
Right.
And
I don't know how much she did with the store that he set her up, and I think she was kind of like a manager. She didn't do any actual work there.
Didn't seem to. From what I've read, I didn't see anything.
Right.
You know, she did do some stuff afterwards. But anyway, Michelle said she was sleeping on the living room couch with her daughter, Michaela, on the night that Greg was killed. It was the middle of the night, and a sudden noise woke her up, according to Michelle. She rushed to the master bedroom, and it was dark, and then she claimed that someone smashed her in the face, knocking her unconscious for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know how she'd know how long it was if she was unconscious.
Right. And I don't know why, if she claims she hears a noise, why does she run to the master bedroom? Why doesn't she go to the door or a window or something to see if someone is breaking in?
I don't know. Maybe she heard the noise in the master bedroom, but would you run toward it unarmed?
No.
Probably not. But when she came to from her being knocked out, she walked over to the bed and she saw Greg in the bed. He was shot in the head. So that's when she said she called 911, but that's debatable because she probably was cleaning things up.
Yes.
Yes.
Because she finally admitted to doing that, so that had to take some time to clean up the blood and the gore.
Right. And make sure that she didn't leave any evidence of what she'd done.
Right. I mean, the gun, the weapon was wiped clean.
Yes, no fingerprints at all.
The wrench or whatever she claimed the intruder had hit her with was wiped clean.
Yeah, even Greg's hands were cleaned, and one of them was tucked under the blanket.
Yeah,
that's
just strange stuff.
Yeah, so when the police arrived, it was a really odd death scene, and they knew that something was up. Just, it didn't seem like what she said it was.
Right. There was just something off about it.
Right. So Greg had been shot with his own gun. There was no sign of forced entry, and Greg's gun was lying next to the wrench on the floor. And, as we said, everything was wiped clean. So, no forensic evidence at all.
Right.
Yeah.
It really seemed staged to the police, and they were pretty suspicious quickly.
Yes, right away.
So, Michelle was interviewed by the police and described an intruder dressed in black.
Sure.
Of
course. How else would you describe an intruder?
That's how they dress. If we're going to intrude, we're going to be in black.
Right.
She didn't say about a mask or anything. That would have been overkill.
Okay.
Investigators didn't believe Michelle's story. They told her that either Greg killed himself or she was responsible. But she insisted that an intruder had broken into their home, hitting her in the face with the wrench and shooting Greg.
Yeah.
But after repeating her story 8 times or so, she changed, saying that Greg had committed suicide.
And this is all on videotape.
Right.
Yeah.
So we know that she was figuring out that this intruder story wasn't going to work.
Yeah. After several times saying, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So she then changed her story, saying that Greg had killed himself, and she covered it up to protect her daughter.
Yeah, and she really laid on the waterworks during that part.
Right. She was really emotional. And she said that her facial bruise was self-inflicted as part of the cover-up.
Yeah, I think it was her right cheek was very swollen and bruised.
Right.
Yep. So yeah. She had been hit or hit herself, something.
Or
something had happened.
Or maybe Greg hit her.
That's another thing could have happened.
Right. But, I mean, she had been hit by something.
Yes, that was true.
So the police, however, thought both stories were falsehoods, that there wasn't an intruder, and he didn't kill himself.
Yeah.
And they're thinking that she killed him.
Yep. I think they pretty much thought that right off.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was a suspicion from the family members.
Yes.
That Michelle had done it.
Yeah. And not only Greg's family members, but her family members.
Her own family, her kids.
Yeah, her grown sons were estranged from her. Greg's first wife, Kathy, also thought that Michelle had something to do with Greg's death. And during the time of the investigation, Michelle tried to get her son, Andrew, actually to frame Kathy, Greg's first wife, for the murder.
Yeah, this is... Almost like Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
I want you to go out and get an extra large sweater.
Yeah. Go out in the woods.
Right.
Shoot a gun.
Shoot a gun into it. Or shoot a gun so that there'd be residue or something.
Gunpowder. Yeah. On the sweater.
And then stuff it in her car.
She was even specific enough to say, go to Walmart.
Yeah.
Get a large sweater.
Holy cow.
Yeah. But to her son's credit, he no way. He wasn't doing that.
Well, he doesn't want to be an accessory.
No. And I think he's probably a decent human being who doesn't want to have anything to do with covering it up for her either.
Yeah.
But after Greg died, Michelle also began an intimate relationship with her older son's best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that didn't go over well with her sons either.
So, and this is a guy who's, what, 15, 20 years younger than her?
Yeah, 10 or 15. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's the best friend of her oldest son.
Yes. And it hasn't been long since her husband died.
It almost defies belief.
Well, Michelle's sons were just really fed up with it because the friend of theirs who was dating Michelle actually came up to one of her sons and said, I just want to be, you know, on the up and up with you, brother, or however young guys talk to each other.
Yeah.
And let you know that I'm probably going to have sex with your mom tonight.
Yeah, isn't that what you want to hear from your best friend?
Isn't that awful?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So he was really pissed off.
I can imagine.
And then he saw his friend trying to be the father to his younger sister, 4-year-old Michaela.
Right.
And trying to just take over the role.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a personal trainer. And afterwards, Michelle had gotten an exercise studio, and he was the personal trainer there.
Oh, she sold the other shop?
I don't know if she sold it, but she did have an exercise studio.
She had the exercise studio.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Now, according to Michelle's sister, Laura, if Michelle's talking, she's usually lying.
That's her sister.
Yeah.
All right.
She said over the years, there have been several fake pregnancies. There have been multiple breakups with men. I mean, the two marriages, that's nothing.
Yeah.
She had so many boyfriends that she would use and get rid of and cheat on and just drama constantly.
Right.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to be pregnant with twins with this best friend's.
Yes. During the court case, she tried to put off the case by saying she was pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
And this guy really seemed to believe it, the guy she was with.
Yeah.
Now, she's like 40.
He'll believe anything.
How likely is it, and you're a medical person, so tell me, how likely is it that a 40-year-old woman is going to get accidentally pregnant with twins?
Well, it's not unlikely.
Well,
I mean, if she's not menopausal.
Yeah, but having twins in the first place, is there's some odds of how having one baby compared to having two.
That's true.
Right?
But it doesn't really change with increasing age.
The twin part, but the getting pregnant part does.
Well, pregnancy is tougher when you're older.
Right.
But you know, 40 years old, not too tough to get pregnant.
Okay. Well, it turns out she wasn't pregnant anyway.
Right.
It was a lie.
It was a big, fat lie.
But this boyfriend said that he had seen an ultrasound of the baby. So I don't know if he's naive or if he's just as crooked as she is and he's lying.
Well, he comes across in the interviews with him as being really stupid.
Doesn't he?
I gotta tell you.
He comes across as being totally naive and she's just manipulated him.
I wouldn't even say naive. I'd just say stupid.
Really? Why would you say stupid?
Because he bought everything she said.
Right. Which I would think could be from being naive.
No, listen to him talk.
Yeah?
He's not real bright.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
And not to demean personal trainers, but that doesn't take a lot of brains to do.
Ooh.
Oops.
I don't know about that.
There I go.
I don't know. I think that possibly she was after his body, though, because he was in good shape. She was very superficial. That I would agree to.
I would certainly think that.
Yeah.
And that's a nice little snack on her way to something bigger.
Oh, you're very, 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 very cynical.
Well, I'm just going by her track record.
That's true, yeah.
There probably was no chance at all that she was ever going to be with him for any length of time.
But can we just say at this point, there is a difference between being promiscuous and being a murderer, right? So the fact that she was promiscuous and lied and did these things, being a murderer is a whole different level.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think it speaks to her character.
Yes.
With the promiscuity and the lies and everything else.
Yeah, she didn't seem to really respect anyone but herself.
Right.
Well, did she even really respect herself? Okay. Maybe just the dollar is all she respected.
She respected the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I would love to hear about her childhood and what happened. Not to make her that way, but what her influences were that may have leaned her in that direction. That would be fascinating to find out.
Well, we can make something up.
That wouldn't be the same.
Okay.
So to be fair, actually, Greg wasn't a saint either.
No, he had some rough edges, didn't he?
Yeah, and he had a lot of enemies. And also, he was a steroid user, and he had a very short temper.
Mm-hmm.
So how Greg and Michelle met. This is what you brought up earlier.
I've been waiting to hear this.
It's in dispute, but at least one relative believes it was through a bondage website.
Uh-huh.
So they met over the internet. That is...
We know they met over the internet.
We know that, yes.
And whether it's a regular dating site or a more specific dating site...
Yeah.
...is in dispute.
But I could see Michelle saying, oh, well, I need a rich guy and I need this and this, you know, check, check, check. And she goes on the internet and just finds what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And then manipulates and pretends to be whatever that guy wants.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no question in my mind
that
she was shopping.
Sure. I believe that, too. Michelle denies that that's how they met, of course. But she did admit that Greg once owned a bondage club. And I don't know what a bondage club is. If any listeners know what a bondage club is, let us know.
Well, we can guess.
Well, what would a club would be a group of people getting together? Or a way to just meet one other person?
Well, maybe that.
Yeah.
But they have a common interest.
Okay.
In a sexual proclivity that a lot of people aren't into.
Sorry. Okay. All right.
How's that?
It's very fair-minded of you. I like that.
I'm trying to be.
So 3 months after Greg's death, Michelle was arrested and charged with the murder. So it was about time for many people, right?
Yeah.
They were thinking
probably
she's
some
getting
people
away
are thinking, how come it's taken so long?
She's spending money.
I mean, there's no way either of those stories work.
Right. And when you're talking about a case like this, 3 months doesn't seem long because there are cases where it takes years and years.
Right.
But in real life, when something's happening, 3 months is a long time. It's a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michelle has told Andrew both versions of the story. That's one of her sons. And Lee, her other son. So they say that she's told them different versions at different times. She goes back and forth.
Yeah.
Almost like she doesn't know what the truth is anymore. Like she's so wrapped up in her own lies.
Well, she convinces herself. She knows the truth. She just can't remember which lie she told at which time.
But do you think there's any truth to the fact that someone who lies that much makes themselves believe their lie, because that's the way to do it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Convince yourself of the lie, and that way you can convince other people that it's
right.
true.
But she couldn't remember the lies or the...
Who she told what.
Who she told what to.
Yeah, so she told different people different things.
Yeah.
She had told her sister Laura that Greg committed suicide. Mm-hmm. But then later, and maybe you were right, maybe it was about the insurance money, she said it was an intruder.
Yeah.
So she went back and forth, which, if you're going to lie like that, you really need to stick with one story.
Yeah, or if you're doing, here's my intruder story, here's my suicide story, and they have to be the same. But yeah. She would put little nuances and twists in each story.
And she added to it.
So they never came out exactly the same each time.
That's right. And I'm surprised she would do that, because an experienced liar should know better.
One would think, huh?
One would think, because that's what got her in trouble with the 48 hours interview, is she started adding things to her story. Not only did she change it, but she added to it.
Right.
Yeah. So, as her son said, she really couldn't decide which story to go with, and probably couldn't remember who she told what to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she should have kept a computer or something and said, written down, here's the story I told today to this person.
And then when she talks to a person, wait, let me check my phone.
Right.
And then I'll talk to you about what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Keller, Texas Police Department, they admit that their crime scene investigation was flawed. They did not have a lot of homicide experience in Keller. And there was some cross-contamination on the scene. So Greg's body was transported, for example, to the medical examiner's office, wrapped in the bed sheets he was in. That's not a good thing to do.
No.
No.
Even we know that.
Right. And then each item that you pick up at a scene, you should have a fresh pair of gloves each time.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. They'd go from one item to the next.
With the same pair of gloves.
Yeah, so you could be passing DNA from one thing to another. So they had a lack of forensic evidence because of the wipe downs she did. But then the mistakes they made in their investigation made it worse.
Right.
Yeah. So in that way, they weren't really sure if they could get a conviction, because it was all circumstantial, although very strong circumstantial evidence, right?
Right.
So the prosecutor offered Michelle a plea bargain because of the lack of forensic evidence.
And she's going to accept it.
Yeah. So rather than murder, she could plead to tampering with evidence, which would be her cleaning thing that she did. And there's a Texas charge called deadly conduct, and that means that you're wielding a weapon irresponsibly.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a pretty good deal for her. Someone that killed someone in cold blood, as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So
she could get off with a fairly light sentence.
She could. It carried a maximum sentence of 20 years, but Michelle was hoping for the minimum amount of time. For the minimum amount of time. So the minimum amount of time would just be a few years. So when she first talked to the 48 hours guy, Peter Van Zandt, she said she thought she'd probably spend 2 or 3 years in prison, and then she could get out and take care of her daughter.
Yep.
So she had some real delusions about this, I think.
Oh, didn't she?
I think she kind of convinced herself that she could pretty much get away with anything. One of these kind of people.
Right. But it didn't turn out that way.
No.
So she gets to court to plead.
Don't get too far ahead of us.
Oh, I'm ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Take it away.
Yeah. So, Michelle was interviewed on the TV show 48 Hours, as I mentioned, and this was done while she was waiting in jail to finalize her plea.
Right. She hasn't pled yet.
At a sentencing hearing. Right. So she's going to go through with the plea. She's talking about how she's taking the plea, but she still has to go to the sentencing hearing to have the plea go through and be official.
Right.
But she surprised everyone by going back in this interview to her original story of an intruder. And I kind of think it was just to make herself look good on TV.
Yeah, because she's gone from pleading to these two crimes to cleaning up the weapon.
Yeah.
And
criminal conduct.
So
deadly conduct.
She's all set to do that, and then yes. She's going back to the intruder story and saying that she didn't have any hand in the murder or in the killing.
Not only that, but she elaborated on it.
Yeah.
So she elaborated on the story with a theory that Greg had reached for his gun, and the intruder got a hold of it from him. She also said that she saw the intruder leave through the front door, which was new. This was added.
Yeah.
And then she started to imply that it was someone she knew, like a family member.
Yeah.
Because the interviewer, Peter Van Zandt, said to her, well, who do you have an idea who might have done it?
And she said, I got an idea.
Yeah, she said, well, I have my assumptions.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
You know, the initial story was she woke up when she heard a noise, and now she's talking about how she saw the intruder struggling with her husband and taking the gun from him.
Well, I don't know if she said she saw that. That was her theory of what happened.
Oh.
I don't know if she said she saw that, but she said that she saw him leave.
Yeah. She was knocked out then. Right?
Supposedly, you would think, if he knocked her out, yeah.
Okay.
But then this whole, I have assumptions, was she going to try and frame someone else in the family for it? That's what I wonder.
Of course she was.
Because it seems like Greg was the one in the family that had the money, and some family members worked for him, right?
Right.
So I wonder if she was trying to set up somebody.
Oh, I think she was.
Yeah, which is really not cool.
No.
No. When Judge Scott Wish learned about Michelle's new story from the guards who guarded her during the 48 hours interview, he hauled her into court, and he was very angry.
He was more than angry.
Yeah. I mean, he really lit into her.
Yeah.
It was wonderful to watch.
So there goes her plea deal.
Yeah, he accused her of playing games with the court, and then the prosecutor asked Michelle if she was indeed guilty of deadly conduct. Now, at this point, she could have said yes and taken the plea. She still had that chance.
She still could have.
They were giving her every chance, but she said no.
Yeah.
So the judge said that if she was innocent, she needed to go to trial with a jury of her peers.
Exactly.
So at this point, the plea deal was revoked, and Michelle went on trial for murder.
Yes, she did.
So on the eve of Michelle's trial, Michelle went back to the story that Greg's death was a suicide. So this is the part that I found unbelievable. So she goes through this. She says the intruder, she's going to court, and then she says that it was a suicide. Well, doesn't she realize that she's said this other thing so many times and that the prosecutor is certainly going to bring that up in court?
One would think, huh?
You would think so, but she seems to live in her own little fantasy world.
She does.
Yeah, I can't understand it. I mean, I understand that she was probably a selfish and, you know, for lack of a better word, evil person. But some of her behavior is just inexplicable, even by the standards of a narcissist. I don't understand it.
No.
No.
So it's been almost 3 years since his murder, Greg's murder.
Right, when they go to trial.
When they went to trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the difficulty there was that there was no forensic evidence available, so the case was completely circumstantial.
Right, and this is why they'd offered the plea deal in the first place.
Exactly.
Right, so they knew that.
The defense claimed Greg's death was a suicide. Michelle's defense attorney, Clay Graham, said that Michelle panicked and tried to cover it up.
Right.
But during the prosecutor's closing arguments, Michelle's interview with 48 Hours came back to haunt her.
Yeah. It was on tape. It was for TV. How could she not know that?
Yeah. So she thought she could go on TV and say this outrageous, crazy thing, said the prosecutor.
Right.
That's a fantasy world she lives in.
Well, I agree. That's what I said.
The defense argued that things weren't going well for Greg, and he was depressed.
Okay.
Now, okay, maybe. But so they're going with the suicide theory.
They were, yeah, but a lot of Greg's family members said no, that wasn't the case. He was excited about this and that.
Right.
He didn't have a history of depression.
He did not.
No.
Now, Michelle didn't testify, which I think rarely do the accused testify, because there's all sorts of bad things that can happen.
Yeah, if you testify, then you're opening yourself up to questioning by the prosecutor.
Right.
So that's a risky thing to do.
The prosecution presented evidence that Michelle and her daughter stood to benefit from three separate life insurance policies.
Yeah.
That Greg held on his life.
Well, sure.
And I think I remember talking more about the trial. I mean, there was another thing that forensic evidence did show, that it would be very difficult for him, Greg, to kill himself with the gun several feet away from him.
Right. Yeah, it had to be greater than 6 inches away, up to 24 inches
and
away from his head.
Less than 2 feet.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was unusual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the gun was several feet away on the floor.
Right. And his hand was tucked under the blanket.
Yeah.
Yeah. And jurors also watched a videotaped interview with Keller police, and that's the one in which Michelle told officers for hours that the shooting had been an intruder who broke into their home and shot her husband.
Right.
And later in the tape, when she switches to the story of the suicide, it doesn't seem believable.
No.
No.
Not at all.
So neither theory is believable.
No.
I guess what I'm trying to say.
No.
No.
I mean, and you look at it, the overwhelming impression you get is that she's sticking to the intruder story until it's apparent to her that it's not going to fly. And then she switches to the suicide story.
Well, I can see that in the beginning, but why does she go back to the intruder story again? That's what I don't understand.
Because she doesn't have anything else. Neither story is working.
No, but if she's going on TV, she could have stuck with the suicide story.
Maybe.
Right?
But she's still trying to get the money from the insurance companies, so...
Well, I don't think she'd get the money from the insurance companies even if she took the plea, because she's admitting that she shot him.
No, but...
So, I don't think that was a factor anymore.
You don't?
I feel like it was more just how she wanted people to think of her. She wanted to come out looking good. Because she was very narcissistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't work.
No. The jury deliberated for about 7 hours.
Bad sign.
That was over 2 days, but it was only 7 hours of deliberation, and then they returned with the guilty verdict. Now, jurors also found her guilty of tampering with evidence involving a gun, but for some reason I can't figure out, they acquitted her of a count of tampering with her husband's body.
Yeah. Well, I guess they couldn't.
Why did they do that?
They figured maybe they couldn't prove that.
I think they could.
Well, but they got her for the crime, and they got her for changing evidence.
Yeah, they got her for the big thing, the murder, is the main thing, I guess. Now, she cried after the judge read the verdicts.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, at that point, it seemed like her lifetime of lies had finally caught up with her.
But wait.
It took a long time. Now, her former sister-in-law believes that Michelle has killed before, so this is interesting.
Yeah, this is like a side note at the end.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
But it's a big one.
It sure is.
It's a game changer.
I want to see how this turns out.
Yeah. So Greg's sister, she's also named Michelle, she's Michelle Fletcher. She's convinced that Michelle killed her husband as well as her brother. So her brother was Greg, right?
Yeah.
Her husband was Bryn.
Bryn.
And I mentioned earlier how she had made a pass at Bryn.
Right, a not-so-subtle pass.
No. Now, as a woman watching the 48 Hours show, I would say Bryn is a much more attractive guy than Greg.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think Michelle kind of had her eye on Bryn. And I don't think she liked the fact that he loved his wife and didn't want to fool around with her. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that might be true. I think the other thing is that Bryn worked with Greg, was like his number two in command.
They were good friends, yeah.
And I think there was some evidence that Bryn knew that Michelle, Greg's wife, Greg's Michelle, was draining money from him and was going to tell him what was going on.
Yeah.
And that was also a motive to do him in.
Yes. So 10 months before Greg Williams was murdered, his sister Michelle Fletcher, she saw Bryn for the last time. So it was only 10 months before Greg died that Bryn died. Not even a year.
Right.
That's remarkable, don't you think? Yes. What are the odds that two people are going to be murdered in your family?
In the same family.
In the same year.
Right. Not very good.
That's a red flag to me. Now, Bryn Fletcher worked for Greg, as you said, and he was going on a business trip in the company pickup truck. This was what happened when the last time that Michelle Fletcher saw her husband, Bryn. So about 45 minutes into his drive, Bryn pulled off the side of the road, and it was near this tower. I don't know what kind of tower that was. Something out in the country.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. But this is where Bryn pulled off the side of the road. And Michelle Fletcher believes that Michelle Williams lured Bryn to that area in order to kill him, that it was premeditated and planned.
Yeah, because she had mentioned that Bryn is from Great Britain or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle Williams gave him a map because he didn't know his way around as well as he should have.
Yes, yes. So he relied on Michelle to give him directions.
Yes.
Now, when the pickup truck was reported as an abandoned vehicle there by the tower in the middle of nowhere, like in the middle of a field, the sheriff found Bryn's body in the front seat of the truck, and Bryn had been shot once in the head.
Right.
Now, the county ruled Bryn's death a suicide, and Michelle Fletcher believes that Bryn was about to tell Greg about Michelle's out-of-control behavior, as you mentioned. So her embezzlement of money from Greg's accounts and spending sprees and probably cheating on him, let's be honest here.
Well, right? She has a history of that.
Yeah.
So I would bet that she was.
And then there was also some obscure story that she had said that Greg's older daughter, by his first wife, I think she was 10 at the time, tried to poison her. So I don't know what that was all about. But Michelle Fletcher had brought that up.
Yeah.
That Michelle was telling people that Greg's older daughter, a 10-year-old.
A 10-year-old is going to devise a plot to poison the stepmother.
Her. Yeah. So Greg's sister, Michelle, said that Greg would not have liked that at all. And if he heard about the money and he heard about what Michelle was saying about him, he would have wanted a divorce.
Definitely.
And there was a prenup, so...
Uh-oh.
She wouldn't have done that well in a divorce.
So we got to get rid of him.
Yes. Now, Michelle...
But first we got to get rid of Bryn, because he's going to rat her out.
Yeah. Yeah, which is really sad. So Michelle Fletcher believes that Greg would have divorced her if he knew about these behaviors. And although Greg wasn't a perfect guy, he did adore his daughters, and he was an attentive and protective father. And everyone that knew him has said that they've interviewed. That he was not perfect, but he was really a good father. Cared about his daughters a lot. Even his ex-wife said that.
Seems to be. Yep.
Yeah. So Fletcher believes that Michelle needed to silence Bryn, and after Bryn's death, Michelle Williams handled Bryn's final arrangements. Michelle Williams told police to leave Michelle Fletcher alone, actually, because she was too distraught over the loss of her husband. And Michelle Williams said, I'm going to take care of everything for her. Just leave her be, and I'll be the go-between.
Wasn't that nice of her?
A very caring sister-in-law.
Yeah. But I don't know, why would people believe that? Why would they deal with her and not with the spouse?
I don't know, but she was very grief-stricken. And maybe they had no reason to suspect Michelle. It was ruled a suicide, so why would they suspect her? And she had Michelle Fletcher sign the papers to have Bryn cremated right away, like within 2 days of his death. Michelle Fletcher was grief-stricken at the time, and it wasn't until everything was over and done that she realized that she'd been tricked into signing these papers. She didn't even know what she was signing, according to her. So Michelle Fletcher even believes that Michelle Williams fabricated an alibi for herself on the day she killed Bryn.
Yeah.
So.
She's a devious woman.
She doesn't like Michelle. She finds her to be.
Not too many people do like Michelle.
No.
Williams, that Michelle.
Right. And she made 6 phone calls around the time that Bryn died to her family members, just chatting and telling them that she was shopping at Target. which seemed really strange. Why do you call people from Target and say, "Hi, I'm at Target," with no real purpose for the call?
Well, the purpose, obviously, is to establish the alibi.
Well, right? Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. But if she hadn't done the murder, why would she have done that?
She wouldn't have.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to look at it from both sides here.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
You're trying to be objective.
Well, I don't think I can be objective about this, but I'm trying to look at both sides of it as much as I can.
Okay.
Official reports of Brin's death also say that he was shot on the right side of his head, but Brin was left-handed.
Yeah.
So that's very suspicious.
So he wouldn't have shot himself.
With his non-dominant hand.
Right.
That's highly unlikely.
Very unlikely.
And they have no reason to believe that he was suicidal.
Not whatsoever.
No. But the thing is that people didn't even suspect that Michelle had killed Brin until Greg ended up dead, and then they started seeing the connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, what's the odds of two suicides in one family within a year?
Right.
So Brin dies, it's written off as a suicide, and everyone's going to kind of take that as a definite.
Yeah.
Except then Greg dies.
Right. And that makes me think that she'd gotten away with Brin's death, so she thought she could get away with Greg's as well. She probably felt that she was free and clear.
I think so.
Yep.
But she's not.
No. So for Greg's murder, Michelle was given 60 years in prison. So she'll be eligible for parole in 30 years. And at that time, she'd be 75 years old.
Okay.
Yep. So that seems like a fair punishment.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't get the death penalty.
No.
And Texas is big on death penalties.
Well, I guess, but not that many people really get executed.
No, it just seems like most of them are in Texas. They do get executed.
Right. But what about women? It's probably different with women.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But she'll be at least 30 years. And probably longer.
Well, that's her first time that she'll be eligible. Yeah.
So.
Right.
She's in forever.
Well, I was hoping that they might be able to get her on Brin and then she'd never be out. But when Michelle Fletcher went to the police, they said it case closed. They weren't going to look into it anymore.
Well, we'll see.
So that's too bad.
I think we ought to keep checking from time to time.
Well, sure, but I don't think there's any way they'll get more evidence unless somebody has information that they come out with.
Yeah.
Because everything's been destroyed. I mean, they couldn't even get the phone records anymore.
Okay.
Because too much time had passed.
Well, so they'll solve that problem by denying her parole.
Possibly, yeah. Well, hopefully these people will come to her parole hearings and speak.
I'm sure.
Against her being released.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dickie?
Good story.
Yeah. Did you know that sometimes people come up to me and they say, "How can I support True Crime Brewery?"
I'm sure they do, because people really like what we do, and they're looking at you and thinking, "What can I do to help you out?"
Yeah. Now, it mostly happens when I'm dreaming, but it still makes me happy when I wake up.
Oh, I thought this was based in reality.
Well, it's mostly when I'm dreaming.
Okay.
So to those who are supporting us, I'd just like to say another big thank you, because we really do appreciate it.
We sure do.
There are just some little costs that go along with running the podcast that it helps out with.
That's right.
Right.
So we truly appreciate any help you can give us.
Right. So there are a couple of ways that you can support True Crime Brewery. If you go to our website, www.tiegrabber.com, and you click on Team Tiegrabber Perks, there are three levels of support, and they start at only $2 a month, so that's a bargain.
$24 a year.
Yep.
How can you beat that?
Yep. So for your support, you'll receive a perk from the brewery, and we're in the works of having episodes only for Team Tiegrabber members. We haven't gotten to that point yet because we don't have that many episodes. We haven't been out that long. But that's the end game. That's what I'm planning.
Somewhere down the road.
Yeah. But if you want a free and easy way to offer your support, we now have an Amazon gift card link and Audible links on our website. So if you join Audible through our link, we get a tiny piece of Amazon's fortune, and you get a free trial of 2 audiobooks. Now, I personally am an Audible customer, and I love to listen to books while I'm driving or when my hands are otherwise busy. I like to It makes it easy. You don't have to hold the book, right?
Right.
So if you're knitting or brushing the dog or painting, I do a lot of painting around the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
And audio book.
Yeah.
Comes in handy.
So if I run out of recent podcasts to listen to, I listen to an audiobook.
For sure.
Yeah. So it's a free trial. Why not try it for a month? Get a couple books.
See if you like it.
Help support your favorite podcast or one of your favorite podcasts, right?
See?
Yeah.
I like that.
And also, as you begin your holiday shopping, you can click on our Amazon gift card link, and that's on our website's front page. And through that, you can buy Amazon gift cards. Those are great for the impossible-to-buy people in your life. Now, Dick and I, we have adult children, one in college, and Amazon gift cards are great gifts. They're easy, and they actually make them happy because they can use them to buy whatever they want.
Exactly.
And the stuff we buy them, well, they're usually not that thrilled. I try and pick out clothes and stuff, but I think they'd rather have the Amazon gift card.
Oh, I know that.
Absolutely. And if you go to the On True Crime Movies link on our website, we have also posted a link for a 1 month free trial of Showtime Anytime. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you sign up for this link, Tie Grabber will receive a little something from them.
Okay.
Now I know we watch Showtime, Ray Donovan, which just finished, great show.
Masters.
Masters, Shameless, and The Affair's coming back in November.
I can't wait.
I know, so it's a good time to try the 1 month.
I think it is.
Of Amazon.
Why don't you guys do that?
Yeah. So, I guess I'm through selling out for now. That's all I had. But just remember that there are many ways to support us and help us keep this podcast free of outside advertisers. We're an independent podcast, and we want to stay that way, don't we?
We do.
Yep.
So, keep the comments coming in. We love to hear from you.
Yep. So, thank you for listening to this episode of True Crime Brewery. This podcast is available on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on Google Play. And if you like the podcast, follow us on Twitter at TieGrabberPods and Instagram, TieGrabberPodcasts. We also have a Facebook page, which I usually update 2 or 3 times a week. And you can see that page and give us a like at facebook.com/TieGrabberPodcasts. And of course, as always, all 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated as well. And if you submit one, we'll happily welcome you to the brewery on one of our upcoming episodes.
For all the good times.
For the good times.
Okay.
Wasn't that a song?
It was.
Okay. All right. So thanks for listening again, and we'll see you later.
Next time. All thanks.
Right. Bye-bye.